Right into the finalizations, item number 19 on the agenda. And Chad and John.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the commission, Secretary Hepler. On page 19, we'll start on finalizations with the Black Hills elk hunting season. Just to kind of justify the proposed changes we have in front of you here today. If you remember the previous month, staff presented some information to you in regards to primarily the cow elk survival from our elk survival monitoring efforts. We have 100 plus cow elk radio marked, and based on the annual survival that we documented from those radio marked elk, we want to reduce primarily some antlerless elk licenses. You'll see a reduction of 450 antlerless elk licenses and a slight reduction of 18 for the any elk. Just kind of want to balance that survival with where we want to be with our population objective and managing that herd. Recommended changes 2 through 5 are some just real slight adjustments to the antlerless elk season dates. And I guess with that, we have no recommended changes for your proposal here.
It's pretty straightforward. comments or questions about Black Hills elk hunting season? Commissioner Olson?
Can you just remind us of what impact the fire and other factors that helped lead to the recommendation for the reduction?
Mr. Chair, Commissioner Olson, the justification for the license adjustments here have nothing to do with the fire that occurred within Custer State Park. It's more so what we documented from cow elk survival. And just to remind you, this is a 2-year recommendation, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Kathy.
Thanks. Kathy Peterson, has these seasons that are spread out been working pretty good? You know, these extra, not seasons, but times of hunting.
I'll defer that to John, if you don't mind.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the Commission. John Kant, I'm the Regional Terrestrial Resources Supervisor for Western South Dakota. Let me clarify, are you talking about the seasons in Custer State Park or the seasons that we run through December for regular Black Hills rifle? Yep. Yeah, so it's actually worked really well. And we have a little bit of history there with folks in the field and having a large number of hunters in those periods of time. And so I think it was a great idea that we made those extra seasons so we could spread those hunters out and not have so much crowding.
Commissioner Jens?
I'll move approval of this proposal.
Okay. I'll second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. Any further discussion? So just maybe to clarify, Chad, the information we have coming back in on the cow herd indicates that is a little lower than we would like it. Is that?
Yeah, we've seen about, if I can, Mr. Chair, we've seen about, I believe, a 9% reduction in annual cow elk survival. And when we plug that information in along with other information into our modeling efforts, that does have an impact in population growth and the number of calves that can be put on the ground to move that population. So
so this would be finalization here would be to increase the cow herd a little bit, or at least sustain that cow herd where it's at.
Yeah, I think with what we have in front of you here today, I don't think we're going to see a significant increase in the elk population per se, but just to accommodate or compensate for that increased mortality that we observed. I think our hunters were probably maybe a little more successful than we thought they might be with that antlerless those annual elk licenses, and we just want to try to balance that out.
Okay. Any other discussion? All in favor of the motion would say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? It is approved.
Mr. Chair, on page 19D would be the archery elk hunting season. And again, the proposed changes that you have here today just reflect how we proportion those licenses for elk hunting opportunity within the Black Hills. We issue a certain proportion to firearm and a certain proportion to archery, and this is just to make that that adjustment here within the archery season. So,
okay, could I have a motion to approve that? Moved and seconded that we approve that finalization. All in favor would say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? It's carried.
To page 19 or 19F in your book would be our prairie elk hunting season. We have, you know, a handful of prairie elk units out there where we try to manage elk populations primarily within social tolerance. A lot of these units are predominantly comprised of private land, and trying to meet that tolerance with those landowners, yet still manage for some level of elk within those units and provide some hunting opportunity. You'll see there the recommended changes there. Number one is just a slight adjustment, going from 149 to 141 licenses overall. There were some tweaks within some of those units, but that's the overall adjustment within this chapter for elk licenses. And recommended change number two there, as you recall, was to establish a new unit that would be comprised all of Harding County, with season dates running September 15th through October 31 and December 1 through the 31st. And I believe John and his staff, obviously we've had conversations with those landowners on there, and we try to accommodate their requests for season dates to accommodate hunters that come in there within that unit. So with that, we have no recommended changes for you on this today. John and I'll sure try to answer any questions on these changes.
Go ahead.
John, could you address this new unit and public versus private? And there's been some discussion that perhaps it should be a new unit and everybody has an equal shot at it because of the differences that are up there. At least some of us have had extended discussion with folks about that.
Yes, sir. Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Jensen. Yeah, I've had those conversations as well. So it is a bit unique from our other prairie units because there is a great good proportion more of public land, particularly the Custer-Gallatin National Forest. That's approximately the enough land area that would cover Custer State Park, so about 73,000 acres up there of Forest Service land. So it is a big bit unique from these other prairie units because of that opportunity, and could present a difference there. But what I would tell you is that we've spent a great deal of time working with the private landowners up there. These elk do spend a good portion of their time on that private land. We're starting to experience more and more damage. In fact, we got a call a couple days ago, heard a 30 elk on a silage pile right up off the Slim Buttes, and we're addressing that issue. So while we may be able to look at this different and handle it a little differently, I would still suggest that the heart of the season and the heart of the issues up there is depredation on private land, and that's why we chose to run it the same as we do our other prairie seasons and use it to help address those depredation issues. But I do see a great opportunity up there with the public land as well. In all of my discussions with the landowners up there, there is some hesitancy and lots of questions to moving into this new season. So what I discussed with them is, let's get this season open. Let's issue a few tags here, see how things go, see how we host hunters and things like that, and then we can kind of work from there. But right now, I think it's best to handle it as a prairie season within the prairie, or a unit, excuse me, within the prairie season as we do these other areas.
Yes, go ahead, Gary.
Then as we were talking this morning, maybe there's a rule that stands in the way of creating a new unit here because of the role that preferences play and where they are supposed to come into account. Is that true? Could you explain that?
Absolutely, Commissioner Jensen. So if we created a new season that would be separate from the Custer State Park and the Prairie and the Black Hills Archery and Rifle Elk. And so the other rule that you're referring to is 4106.01.15. And in there it speaks to the wait period. If you get a elk license, there's a wait period of 10 years. You can apply on the 10th year. And so we would have to go in and address that rule as well and make those changes to reflect this new season.
Could you address to, I mean, this has led to some discussion about the location of elk in other parts of the prairie from east, from the river, maybe west or wherever. Could you just explain where we have elk more than perhaps some might know?
Yeah, so it would appear that elk are coming back on the prairie across the western South Dakota for sure. Elk historically are a prairie animal. If you look back in some of the journals of Lewis and Clark and some of the expeditions early on, elk occurred out on the prairie in big numbers. So maybe not unusual to see them out there, but the big difference now, obviously, is we have a lot of people out there and a lot of land use, and so we have elk popping up near Elm Springs, Wasta. We see them in Perkins County. Of course, they're moving up out of Bennett into Jackson County and Millette County. We even see them over along the Missouri River. We've had some discussions about that, and we have been approached by some folks, one on damage issues, so ripping out some fences, getting into some haystacks, things like that. But then also, is there any opportunity to hunt these animals? So I think we need to have more conversations on that and maybe decide what's the appropriate way to address that. But right now with those elk, they're fairly transient. So we're not seeing that they're holding up in one particular area. They're covering large areas. And by and large, the reports of elk that we get out on those prairie areas, if I could, are bull elk, and so they're very transient, and they may be here today and 20 or 30 miles away tomorrow. So it's interesting, but it'd be a difficult task to decide how we set up a season there.
Thank you.
I think that's a great discussion because it's pretty apparent they're spreading out and going to new areas, and I think it'd be very beneficial for the department to be proactive on that and try to stay ahead of the curve on that whole thing, because I know down, you know, we've had those discussions down along Pine Ridge and the Rosebud about the elk situation down there, and you know, it's not unusual for somebody to say to me, well, I seen an elk on my property, and so they really are going back into the prairie again. So whatever you can do to stay ahead of that, I think would be good. Just another question. Didn't we down there agree to increase the elk take down there in that area, Bennett, Millette?
Yes.
Jar my memory.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, we did increase those licenses, the antlerless licenses as well as the any elk licenses. Now, the most significant increase is to the antlerless licenses, and we were issuing, 30 more. Chad's moving his finger around faster.
Okay, thank you, yeah. Any other comments, questions about that? Okay.
Second.
Been moved and seconded that we approve the finalization of the prairie elk hunting season. All that would be in favor of the motion would say aye.
Aye.
And any opposed? Seeing none, it is approved.
Mr. Chair, page 19H in your book would be the Custer State Park any elk hunting season. And I guess just getting back to Commissioner Olson's question on the effects of the Legion Lake fire in regards to elk. I mean, obviously we know that fire can be detrimental. Matt Snyder was up here talking about some of the things they're gonna be doing to address some of those circumstances from the fire. But fire is, has pros and cons, and I guess we see some of the pros of that fire would be an enhancement to not only elk habitat but other wildlife habitat within the park. Obviously, some of those unique habitats, like maybe some standing dead trees known as snags or things like that, might have been lost, or other timber that might have been valuable to wildlife habitat, but opening up that ponderosa pine and just providing that disturbance, I mean, fires, you know, a natural occurrence or was a natural occurrence on the prairie and very part of that ecosystem. So we see that as a we're excited to see some of the benefits of that fire from a wildlife perspective. So in regards to what we have in front of you here today, again, is an adjustment to the annual elk season, moving it from beginning the third Saturday of September for 16 consecutive days to the entire month of October. You know, both divisions, wildlife and park staff, Matt and his staff down there had met on this, and this was actually a recommendation that came from our staff on this. We think it's going to provide some benefits to allow those, you know, we have thousands of applicants for these Custer State Park elk seasons, and I guess to maybe remove some of that overlap between our any elk firearm hunters and our archery elk hunters within the park. We see that as a positive and a good thing. From a disturbance perspective, I think maybe our license, the number of licenses and densities of hunters during that time period is much lower than what it was back in the mid 90s when we had some higher numbers of any elk licenses issued. We will still have, you know, those two antlerless elk seasons occurring within the very southern portion of the park, south of the R&D division fence. There will be 20 hunters there, but we see this as a positive for our elk hunters that are lucky enough to draw this license. And I guess, I don't know, John, if you want to add anything to that, or if there's any questions, Mr. Chair.
Go ahead, Commissioner Phillips.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We had some good comments on moving this, and there's some differences of opinion out there. Do you think that it's going to affect the wildlife viewability from the tourists? Is there, you addressed it with, we have less numbers now, but do you see a concern at all going forward with changing the dates like this, with moving the elk out of the park, or changing the wildlife, the opportunity for tourists to view the wildlife, the elk, and anything like that? Do you see any problem concerning Gary Brundage's comments?
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Phillips, John Canta again. No, so densities are certainly lower than the times that Mr. Brundage is talking about. So that does have some impacts both ways. One, there's more elk back then for more viewability, but more elk and more opportunities to push them out of the park. With the lower densities now and then the much lower densities of hunters, we don't see much, if any, conflict there. Now, we've also worked real close with park staff. Matt and Mark have been involved through the whole process, and you know, their involvement is that aspect of viewability and visitors and what impact this hunting might have on that. And so we've moved these dates, and there's less of a chance to interfere with visitors coming to view those elk, and we don't see that they'll this number of hunters and activity will push them away from the roads or cause any undue impacts to viewability. And I might add too, with elk in the first place, they're probably one of the less viewed species in Custer State Park, just because they tend to avoid roads. But we don't see that this will have a huge impact on the viewability.
Other questions? Okay, Custer State Park elk hunting. Is there a motion?
Motion to approve.
Second.
Thank you. It's been moved and seconded that we approve the Custer State Park hunting season for 2018 and 19. Further questions? All in favor of the motion, say aye.
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 Any opposed? Seeing none, it is approved.
Mr. Chair, our last finalization action sheet in front of you is on 19I. It'd be our Custer State Park antlerless elk hunting season. If you'll remember, the discussion last month was to, we kind of had a couple different antlerless units. We had a lot of discussion amongst staff, and I guess to implement and try to meet the objective of this antlerless firearm season, we recommend to make the unit boundary for all of those six units for antlerless elk hunting to be the same and define that area south of the very southern portion of Custer State Park, south of the R&D division fence. So we have no recommended changes for you.
And again, the purpose of this was to maybe reiterate that.
Take that, John.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman. So just remind you all that there's been a lot of testing done in Wind Cave National Park, and we're seeing a really high prevalence rate of chronic wasting disease there. It's nearing 15% prevalence. We've been testing in Custer State Park as well, and we're seeing a significant prevalence rate there. So one of the actions that we can take to lessen the spread of chronic wasting disease and reduce those issues is to lower densities in those areas. So there's two parts to what we're doing here. One, to go after that herd of elk, and I'll remind you that we did move some elk through the fence from Wind Cave into Custer State Park a few years back. So we want to target that group of elk, reduce the numbers so that we reduce the prevalence rate and the spread of the disease, but then also get a good sample size from the park so that we can estimate that true prevalence rate in the park and get some better information to work with there.
Thank you. I know we had one rather persistent caller that didn't quite understand or didn't believe that would help. Is there any evidence that it is helping to kind of stem the tide of that wasting disease?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I spoke to that gentleman too, I believe, and it is tough to impress upon people the impacts of chronic wasting disease right now, because by and large across the areas where we have CWD, we're not seeing significant declines in populations just yet. It has been documented that chronic wasting disease can be a limiting factor in herds of elk and deer. So we do know that as the prevalence increases, as the disease progresses, it can cause impacts to overall numbers. The trouble, like I said, is that it happens over a long period of time. And so getting people in tune to that and understanding that what we do now will have great impacts down the road, maybe 10 or 20 years or even greater, that's tough to get them on the same page. But all of the research right now would lead us to believe that lowering densities, as with most wildlife diseases, when we lower densities, we lower contact between individuals, we lower the spread of the bacteria, or in this case a prion that's being spread through the environment. And so it should show good benefits. We should see good things from reducing this and hopefully buy us some time to increase the herd down the road.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Realize this hunting, this antlerless season is south of the fence in the very southern end of the park, which was also the area that was predominantly burned. Are we dealing with a great unknown as to whether this same herd is going to be back there along the fence this summer? Isn't that a huge unknown that we're dealing with here?
Mr. Chair,
go ahead.
Commissioner Phillips, we did ask those same questions amongst staff. That was a potential concern of ours, but what we're hearing from field staff down there at those, they highly believe that those elk that resided in that area prior to the burn are not too far away from that, and grass is going to be greening up soon, and they fully anticipate those elk to return back to that pasture area. Mm-hmm. And I guess just to further add on to John's comment, if I can, Mr. Chair, I mean, to try to answer your question, is this management achieving what we want yet? We really can't answer that yet. We don't have a strong enough sample size yet from a random harvest removal of elk from hunters to conduct that testing to start making some of those. We just don't have enough right now.
Do we know for sure that it is passed on from one elk to the other? I mean, is that?
It can be passed from one individual to the other. It can live within the environment, and not to be labor this discussion, these are great questions, but I think here in the near future we're going to be coming back to you and having a further discussion on chronic wasting disease in general, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay. Okay, it's been moved and seconded that we approve the special Custer State Park antlerless elk hunting season. All in favor of the motion would say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? There are none, so it is approved.
Mr. Chair, on page 19K is just the administrative action to adopt the license adjustments from all the elk hunting chapters that we just talked about here this morning. So,
is there a motion?
So moved.
Okay. It's been moved and seconded. Any questions? All in favor of the motion would say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? It's approved. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the Commission, Secretary Hepler, Tom Kirschman from the Wildlife Division. Moving on to number 20 in your commission book is the application for license action sheet there, specifically to the elk landowner preference discussion that has been occurring over the last month. I'm just going to provide a briefing here to you, Mr. Chairman, then I'm going to turn it back over to John. You all have a package at your seats that we put some information together in respect to some statistics around land eligibility and number of landowners and some things that our staff got together and talked about and tried to pull some information that would be helpful in your decision process. But real quickly, again, on this topic, certainly not a new topic to either you as a commissioner or us as a department. Honestly, this type of discussion over this topic has been going on for years, probably at least 8 to 9 years that I'm aware of in my tenure here, and maybe even before that. And I think the reason for that is there's just no simple silver bullet answer to this particular topic of what it should or should not be. And so there has been changes throughout the years. It was identified and talked about during the elk management plan process and the plan that you folks all adopted. And we had a specific objective in there to review this particular item and then come back to the commission with some recommendations on that. And we went through that process and it was very healthy. Our staff in particular, our conservation officers out here in the Black Hills, working with John and his staff under the direction and supervision of Mike Kintyre, regional supervisor, did an extensive review and looked at all the different ways or alternatives to approach this topic. And what we did is we came back to you as a commission body and we talked about several alternatives or items that we could consider in making adjustments to the landowner elk preference. And that ranged from, again, elk use days to the acreage considerations to combinations of thereof to going from the potential opportunity of obtaining a license every year to every other year to every third year. I think if I remember right, we had 9 different alternatives that we looked at and shared and discussed with you. At that time, you asked us to go back and talk to the elk stakeholder group that we had pulled together for the management plan and have that same discussion. And we did that and had a very good dialogue that day. Commissioner Gary Jensen was present as well to be part of those discussions and hear the thoughts and perspectives. And we had roughly 20 of our members there, which consisted of landowners, sportsmen, and other agency representatives. And again, a great day, a great dialogue. And ultimately, at the end of that day, we came back with no definitive recommendation to change or make some adjustment to the elk landowner preference. And we came back to you as a commission and shared that, and hence that's how we had moved forward at that point in time until here recently you received the petition on this. So I just wanted to share that brief background again of where we've been on this topic and the steps that we've taken. And with that, Mr. Chair, I'm going to turn it back over to John. And you had requested a few statistics and a little bit of history here, and John's going to spend just a couple of minutes, and we will put a timer on him so that we cage him in just a little bit, because honestly this is a topic that could be talked about for another 2 hours. And but we have a few highlights that John will share with you, and then we can go into the action sheet itself. Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Tom. Mr. Chairman, John Canta, Regional Terrestrial Resources Supervisor again. And for the record, last time I was at the mic last month, I didn't say a word. I'd like to just quickly go through a brief history here of kind of where we've been with the acreage requirement and the elk use days. I think that's give you guys a good picture of how we bounced around, and then I'll touch quickly on some of the things in your handout there. But just to give you an idea, so it all starts in 1965, and what the rule said at that time was that half of the licenses, and keep in mind the season was just in Custer County, just adjacent to the National Park, Wind Cave, and Custer State Park, but half of the licenses would go to landowners in that case. In 1966, they add a minimum of 40 acres. It jumps to 80 acres in 1967, and then to 160 acres in 1973. Now, it's the high point is 1979, where it jumps to 320 acres, and then back down to 240 acres in 1982. In 1985, it changes, and I'm surprised we didn't hear this with the comment yesterday, because a lot of the individuals I've been talking to have reminded me about when we had what we called a hardship landowner elk license. And so what we did back then, and what started in 1985, was that an individual, if they had the minimum acreage, could apply every third year for elk preference, landowner elk preference. But if you had significant damage, you could apply every year. So that's the way it read from that point up until, well, I'm going to move along a little quicker here, but maybe the next milestone is 1998, where they change it to 240 acres and 200 elk use days to get that every third year license. And then if you had 2,000 elk use days, you could get the license every year. And then just move you right up to present, and probably the last time that we made, well, it is the last time that the commission made changes to the acreage and elk use requirements, would have been in 2006, which would have applied to the 2007 season. And what that moved it to was the current 240 acres minimum and the 500 elk use days. So I thought that's important to just show you how much we've bounced around there. And my understanding through time is that the commission, the department, we either increased or decreased that elkridge and, or excuse me, that acreage and elk use requirement, either to include certain individuals or to exclude certain individuals. So here we are again, but that's just, like I said, a little brief history for you there. In the packet that was handed out, you can see on that first sheet a nice tiny spreadsheet, and Chad Switzer made that. I printed myself off a great big one here so I could read it. I can get you guys a bigger copy if you'd like. Just quickly run through that with you. What we did is I asked all of our officers that deal with landowner elk preference and verifying whether an individual qualifies for that preference. I asked them to go through the 2017 list and give us an idea of what we're dealing with here. And so I'm not going to go through all of this, but you can see I've broke it out by the rifle elk season, the archery, and the prairie. So this applies to all of those different seasons. I totaled them all at the bottom. And then what you have is just different scenarios here. The first column is acres owned. And so you could see, for example, if we look at the petition, the proposal that you're considering, if we move that to 1,000 acres owned or leased, that first column, you have 26 individuals that own 1,000 acres or more. Now, that's just the individuals that we worked with in 2017. There's probably others that may have not applied last year that could come into the mix, but gives you an idea anyways, based on last year's numbers, what we're dealing with here. I have elk use days over there in the fourth column as well. And you know, 2,000 elk use days was thrown out in the petition, so that gives you an idea there too. So again, I'm looking at the top column, the rifle elk season. All of the individuals that applied in that season, 16 would have had 2,000 elk use days or more, and we would have excluded 84 individuals with that, just looking at those elk use days. So again, I don't want to go through all that. I'll certainly answer any questions you have on it, but just pointing out a couple things there. The other sheets that you have in your packet just go back in time. I think we go back to 2012 for you there, 2010, excuse me. And what you're seeing there is just by unit and then total, the number of individuals that were successful for the landowner elk draw. And of course the unsuccessful, and then that last column is the percent of licenses that were allocated to landowners out of the entire pool. So you can see pretty small percentage across the board there in that last column, and overall 5.6% in 2017. Maybe focus in too, just to give you an idea, last year, 2017, for unit H3A, which is would be where the petitioner is applying, so we had 40 licenses available there to landowners. 40 of those were taken by landowners, and we had 8 individuals that were unsuccessful. Now, they'll get a preference point, and they'll come, if they apply this next year, be able to apply that preference point, and likely would get the license based on what we've seen the last several years. With that, in an effort to be brief as directed, I will stop and answer any questions that the commissioners might have.
Any questions? Thanks, John. I would just point out that we do have a lot of information here before us that really paints a pretty good picture of what has taken place over the years here. So thank you for the information. Any questions? Yes, go ahead, Doug.
Mr. Chair, just a comment. Great information. I really appreciate you laying out the history of where we came from and how we got here. So valuable information. And my question is it time well spent verifying elk use days?
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Sharp, if you would ask the officers, I think they'd tell you no. They don't like to deal with it because it's difficult to go out there and stand on a person's property and argue, you know, 490 elk use days versus 500. We use those elk use days and that 500 is kind of a bar, if you will. So what we want to see is significant elk use. When our officers go out and talk with these folks, and let me back up a little bit just quickly for you. The way that this works is a landowner will apply in the regular application process and then indicate on that application that they want to receive landowner preference. When they do that, then they're put on a list, and those lists are sent to our officers, and they go down that list then, and it's their job to verify whether that individual qualifies for landowner elk preference or not. Now, some individuals, that's pretty easy. You know, folks that we're dealing with year in and year out, we know there's a lot of elk there. We deal with a lot of damage on their property. We can go ahead and check them off. That's a pretty easy deal. It's the individuals that are new, or maybe a grandchild or a son or a daughter that we're dealing with that we haven't dealt with before. That raises a red flag, if you will, and then that officer needs to do a little bit of work to verify that. In some cases, they only have a few days. And so that's why I say in some cases, those officers probably would tell you they don't want to do it because it's difficult at that point in time to go back then and verify all that elk use, not knowing who that person is or having been to their property. But what we do is do our best to go out there. We look at what kind of damage they might have received. We're looking on the ground, literally looking for elk droppings to see how much of that occurs, tracks, just our own knowledge of groups of elk in those areas, and whether or not we think they would have been through that area. But I met with the guys here a couple weeks ago, and I asked them, do we need the elk use days? Should we keep that? Is that something you guys like? And they all said, yes, we need a number. We need something to tell these people that we want to have elk use on that property. So they do want it. It's just difficult to define that elk use.
Go ahead.
Okay, Commissioner Sharp here again. Follow-up question on that. How often do you run into somebody that has the minimum acreage requirements that applies for a landowner tag that does not have hardly any elk use days? Is that, do we have 50 landowners with 240 acres that don't have any elk use days? Is it 10? I mean, can you quantify that?
It's going to vary from year to year, but it's a handful every year. It's just a few individuals. It's certainly less than 10, and a lot of times we're just dealing with a couple of individuals.
Yes, go ahead.
Kathy Peterson, this maybe isn't even a question for you guys, but comment was made yesterday that when a resolution is brought forward, those that might be involved in it don't have enough time to realize it's going on. I know we have, you know, statute tells us how to do all this and stuff, so is there any suggestions on how that could be helped a little bit?
Mr. Chair. Commissioner Peterson, yeah, in fact, I thought about that very thing as we heard those comments yesterday about the communication or awareness of this. And, You know, obviously we have statutory requirements that we need to meet for you, the commission, and having rules out there of notices through public, public notices through specific newspapers. We obviously have email opportunities and social medias. And thinking about that, yes, I mean, there were certainly a lot of people that knew about this. The word was trickling out through many avenues out there. And is there more that we can always do from that? I'm sure there is. And so we need to go back and look at this and explore all those avenues and venues to make sure that our communication outreach on these things are being accomplished. I would also say, even at that, there's still going to be somebody we likely miss or is just not going to hear about it, no matter what venue we use or how often we use it. And so there's certain requirements we need to meet. There's certain things that we do, and it's certainly fair to say we should go back and look at all those things and figuring out that we're doing the best that we possibly can to reach out and notify people.
Mr. Chair, if I could just add a couple of things, and some of the individuals alluded to this yesterday, but we went a little bit beyond here, and I agree with Tom, we can always do more, and it's not a perfect process by any means, but we did take the time. I asked all of our officers to contact the individuals that we're currently working with. We sent out some letters, as indicated by some of the individuals. We made some personal phone calls. I myself, I think I talked to well over 30 landowners. So we can always do more, but I feel like we did a good effort to try and reach out to the folks that we knew would be interested in this topic.
Okay, well, thanks for doing all that, because that, you know, really helps.
Yes, Commissioner Jensen.
Well, it seems that we have a really good balance, overwhelming public support for the way things are, as evidenced by yesterday and comments, and so we're the beneficiaries of all the work that you guys did and earlier commissions did. So based on all that, I would move that we decline, reject this proposal.
Second.
Okay, it's the move that we reject this change in application for license, and second it. Is there any other discussion in regards to this? Commissioner Phillips.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. you know, the comments and the emails and the people that showed up yesterday spoke pretty clearly to us. But I still think that the petitioners brought a good point up. I think they were sincere in their concerns, and I think they have an issue that the department needs to continue some discussion on. I don't think the discussion should, if the motion passes, I don't think the discussion should quit here. I think, I believe in providing some kind of an enhanced opportunity for those legitimate agricultural producers that are experiencing significant depredation on their place. So I hope the discussion goes on. I support the motion. I think we should reject the petition, but I don't think the issue should just die here. I encourage the department to continue discussion on some kind of an answer for their problems.
Okay, thank you, Scott. Yeah, just my comment on that would be, you know, the hardship situation is interesting and might have some merit, but really the proposal here that was brought forward I think did really do some good. It really showed you know, the people's concerns, their actual appreciation of what we have here, and the willingness to work with the department. The department's working with the people very well. I mean, I thought a lot of good things came out of the comments yesterday, and was well worth the effort to bring this forward and go through this, brought the people together so they could really express themselves. So I think I'm like Scott. I think it was a good, had some good benefits in the end here, even though we haven't voted yet, but have unanimous support to turn it down. So it was a good thing. That
One more comment.
Commissioner Peterson.
Yeah, Kathy Peterson. And we also learned that the smaller people are good conservationists, help to give good opportunity for hunting. If we didn't have those people, we might have a lot more development instead, which so the word for farmer, rancher, agriculture is maybe evolving a little bit now as the years go by, and so that it isn't just the one that's totally making their living on the land, because that's a hard situation to have anywhere anymore. It has to be boosted by some other income too sometimes. So they're all, we've been reminded that they all help to make it work for not only the hunters, but for everyone out in the hills, for view building and everything. So, thanks.
Thank you, yes. People of South Dakota have great appreciation for the Black Hills. It's very, very evident. Okay, I believe we're ready. All that would be in favor of the motion, as stated, would say aye.
Aye. Aye.
And are there any opposed? Seeing none, finalization is defeated. So,
thank you, Mr. Chairman. That concludes our finalization action sheets.
Okay, thank you. That would bring